So I want to welcome everybody here to the Second Court of Appeals today. We have two cases set for oral argument. We may or may not take a break between the first and second one. We'll just decide after the first one. Before we get started with our first argument, I'll introduce the panel we have today. To my left is Justice Dana Womack. To my right, Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So I understand that the lawyers for the first case have checked in and we're all ready to go. So I'd ask the clerk to call the case, please.
The court will now call Waste Management of Texas versus Maria Dodd. And may it please the court, Mr. David John to argue for the appellants, Mrs. Jacob Von Swanson to argue for the appellants.
You may proceed, Mr. Gunn.
Before we get started, Justices, there was just a, I have an objection to one of their exhibits that they submitted last night. It's on, it just did an I. Part of the briefing I was done for Louisiana Pacific Corporation. And so it's not part of the reporter's record. And so I would have a lot of questions.
Okay. We'll take that under advisement. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm David Gunn, and I would like to thank the court for allowing advocates enough time to cover the issues that we have. Some courts make us use 15 minutes for the whole thing, and it just that doesn't work well. So thank you for this allotment of time. The two points I would like to highlight today, subject to your questions, are the vice principal issue and the subjective prong, what we call subjective. And the two cases I hope to demonstrate to you will be the best lens for looking at those would be the two best Supreme Court cases are Hammerly Oaks and Louisiana Pacific versus Andrade.
To get a basic situation down, question two does not limit the vice principal factual determination by the jury to Mr. White, does it?
It does not.
Okay. That's so the correct. Only limitation that you're arguing is, and it's not even the pleadings, it's the argument that's made in opening argument and closing argument by plaintiff's counsel that the jury has to make a determination of White as the vice principal.
Well, if they had evidence of another one, they would have evidence to talk about. But I think the case they tried was against White, and I think that's the closest they can get.
Okay, Mr. Smith, you agree, is a vice principal.
Yes.
He had the right to hire and fire. He was asked specifically during his during his testimony whether he could fire Mr. White for not doing what he was supposed to have done with regard to assuring that any safety rules were kept with regard to that particular day.
Mr. Smith, we agree, was a vice principal, which is the mismatch that we see like in Hammerly Oaks, where you have a two-actor case, a person up high and a person down low. The person up high may be vice principal, but didn't do anything. The person down low is the alleged bad actor.
Okay, but Smith is an employee who is subject to the question with regard to question two.
Correct.
Okay. And if the jury can find that he was a vice principal and that there is evidence that he knew that the place where Mr. Dodd died was an uncontrolled traffic area, okay, that there was no traffic plan for, he knew there was no traffic plan for, there was a policy that no traffic should be done on traffic directing or spotting should be done on that particular site, and he's a quarter of a mile away the very day that this happened, why can the jury not make a reasonable inference that he is, in fact, the vice principal who was grossly negligent here?
Despite
the argument,
yes,
during closing argument that you've got to find it was Mr. White.
Because the subjective prong will fail as to Mr. Smith, as to the higher-up. They cannot prove and did not prove that he, I'm going to use the verb proceeds from the jury question, that Mr. Smith proceeded to do anything grossly negligent.
Other than not implement a traffic control plan that was supposed to be implemented in writing for that particular landfill.
Which I think is very similar to what happened in Andrade. And the traffic control plan was addressed by Mr. Smith, and he said, no, we had essentially the equivalent, what he called a site operating plan, that's part of the permit with TCEQ. And he laid that out.
Okay, can you point out to me in DX1, DX2, and PX100 any traffic control devices or any evidence of any actual traffic control occurring at the site of the accident? Other than the berm?
Correct. No, I cannot.
Okay.
I cannot. Our argument on the safety is the berm. And I would divide the workplace into five zones of risk: the working face, the tipping floor where the trucks back up and dump, the active area, which is a 50-foot boundary zone around it, the road, and the berm. And the testimony from Mr. White is, from Mr. Rick White is, I put him in the safe place behind the berm. Jury doesn't have to believe that, but that's the testimony. And there's no testimony contrary. Mr. Smith was not involved at all.
Other than the dead body at the place where Mr. Rodriguez said he was instructed and he turned and that's where that occurred.
There's nothing linking that to White or to Smith. It absolutely happened, and which is why they sued the driver, Rodriguez, and why Mr. Rodriguez didn't go to trial, because he was going to lose. He ran the man over. But the next step that the plaintiffs have to take under Chapter 41 is to have clear and convincing evidence of all of the prongs. And we put up a fight about where the danger was. We agree there's a danger on the working face, where the bulldozers are smashing the trash and so on. We do not agree there's a danger at the berm or even in the road, not an extreme risk under Chapter 41.
Okay, did the traffic control plan requirement in the policies for waste management limit traffic control to the working,
The working face.
The working face. Or did it extend to the tipping area? Or did it extend 58 feet beyond that where they're turning around to back up so they can drop anything?
Is there
anything about the actual policies that limited the definition of traffic control plan, okay, to out on the trash itself, out on the heap itself where all the equipment's being used to mow it down?
The plaintiffs brought no evidence to elucidate what's in the policy, what I'm calling the SOP, the site operating policy, that Mr. Smith talked about.
Was there any testimony from Mr. Haroff or Smith or White that limited the traffic control plan to the actual trash heap itself?
Haroff said he was safe at the berm. So and I think that's the consistent testimony really of all three of the employees, of Haroff and Smith and White, that at the berm he's safe. And I don't really think the plaintiffs quarrel with that. The question is, how did he get to the road? And that is where the plaintiff's case just doesn't get there. That they have no, it's a one witness case on who did what. Now our guy, Rick White, testified, and he does not have to be believed, but they've got to have some evidence to say our guy ordered the man to be in the dangerous spot. I mean, we've put up a contest about whether being on that dirt road is even an extreme risk under Chapter 41. But if you spot them that, it's still a one witness case on who did what when. So that's the problem with Andrade. And Andrade, I think, is on all fours on the subjective prong. You had two employees there who testified, we turned off the power. Mr. Gregory said he turned off the power. Mr. Pike said, I saw him turn off the power. And nobody can explain how the power was on when the injury happened. And the Supreme Court pressed. You can read the oral argument transcript. You can read the briefs on the website. I don't mean to give you briefs as evidence. It's just like citing a law review article. But read the opinion, because that was the issue. The plaintiff said the same two things in Andrade that the plaintiff is saying here, which is, you didn't have a good enough safety policy, and we don't have to believe those defense witnesses. And the Supreme Court agreed with that. You don't have to believe the defense witnesses, but the plaintiff still has the burden. And Justice Hankinson made it very clear, that's just lacking. Disbelief is not proof of the opposite, which is what this case comes down to. So that's one pathway for disposition. The other, we've discussed some already, the vice principal point, and I would like to highlight a couple of things out of the record on that, just to make sure that we have the full record before you. The jury question is asking, that uses the word confided, because I don't think we're going to hear an argument about the hiring and firing prong. I think everybody's going to agree that evidence is not there. So what about confiding management of something relevant to the actor? Confiding management of either the whole company, no evidence of that, or a department or division. I have given you in tab G, plaintiff 17. The final column is entitled business unit name. And the business unit name all the way down is the DFW landfill. Is that a department or division? I don't know exactly what a department or division is, but that's the best there is in this record. That same exhibit also gives you the names of the employees and their job codes for exempt status under the overtime laws. You can match those job codes up to a couple of job descriptions that I've given you as tabs F and H. I won't go through the job codes with you, but you'll see tab F, plaintiffs 2, is a 10-year-old job description that matches for the lower level employee here, Rick White. Tab H, plaintiffs 22, is a job description for a senior district manager. That's Johnny Smith, the higher up. And so that's what we have. If anybody was confided management of the DFW landfill, it's the higher up, it's Mr. Smith. And I would call your attention to one snippet of testimony in tab B from Mr. White, and it's on page 53 of my attachment in tab B, because he's asked about the extent of his authority. Does it include the gatehouse? The gatehouse, of course, is where the trucks come in, they're weighed. When they leave, they're weighed again, and you can see how much weight they've reduced by to know how much to charge them. It did not include the gatehouse at the time. So we know from that testimony that Rick White did not have full management over the DFW landfill. It was restricted to certain operations. That's what we think walks into the problem with Hamerly Oaks, that you've got two people on site, and I will acknowledge you could have two vice principals. I'm saying we don't have that here. We have someone who doesn't match the test in the charge. He was not confided the management of the department or division, which I'm willing to say is the DFW landfill. So we're asking you on vice principal, do what you did in Dendy and say the plaintiff has a burden of proof. You laid out the rules, you laid out the standard. This is not a preponderance case. If it were a negligence case, I wouldn't be here. I would not be able to win. A gross negligence case is a very different creature. And so we think you can dispose of it on this testimony of the two witnesses and the documents that we've just walked through on vice principal. On the subjective prong, if we go there, it's really a one witness case. And I think Andrade is the closest Supreme Court case on that point. They may have an answer to it. I'm listening, but I think their proof just came up short. And if the court has no further questions, thank you for your time.
I'm good.
Mr. Von Plonsky? Sure.
May it please the court. The jury in Denton County got it right. The judge in Denton County got it right. And I just want to make clear what the Denton County judge said at the end of the evidence after the directive verdict made by the appellants in that case, using the same arguments that we're seeing here today. I find that there is legally sufficient evidence, at least circumstantial evidence, of subjective prong and some level of direct evidence. So he then went on and denied the directed verdict.
Am I remembering correctly that the motion for directed verdict did not address the vice principal argument?
The judge let that go to the jury. He also moved for directed verdict on the vice principal argument. Or at least, no, I moved for directed verdict on the vice principal argument. It was denied. It was denied on directed, but then it went to the jury. And the same arguments were made again at the JNOV hearing.
Your motion for directed verdict did you argue that anyone other than Mr. White was the vice principal? In other words, you moved for directed verdict that there was no fact issue to present to the jury on the issue of vice principal. Who were you arguing had been conclusively proven to be the vice principal?
At that point in time, we had argued that Mr. White was the vice principal, conclusively. We also made additional arguments, I believe, on the fact that that Waste Management itself had ratified the acts. That was again denied by the trial court judge at that point in time and passed on to the jury. And so the jury had a unanimous verdict in this case. All 12 of them agreed that Waste Management committed gross negligence when Emilio Dodd was killed at their landfill. And Waste Management's burden in this case is to find that there's no evidence to a legal sufficiency, which means a light most favorable to us, the appellees. Every reasonable deduction of the evidence should be included in our favor. The reviewing court must assume that the fact finder resolved disputed facts of its finding if a reasonable fact finder could find, and circumstantial evidence is sufficient to prove the elements needed for a gross negligence case. The simple fact of the matter is that Mr. White's testimony and Waste Management's testimony about a berm, about placing Mr. Dodd behind some kind of berm, it was simply not true. There wasn't a single piece of evidence that corroborated that story. The evidence showed that, in fact, that he was logically at the position where he was when he died, that he was placed there by someone at Waste Management, most likely Mr. White. And when he was placed there, that was a consciously risky decision, and that was grossly negligent to place him there.
Well, what about Mr. Gunn's argument that even if you disbelieve White's testimony that he placed Mr. Dodd behind the berm, how do we get from there to some affirmative evidence that Mr. White placed him in the roadway?
Well, I believe the jury's free to believe and disbelieve whatever parts of testimony they want. If they feel like some parts of the story that Waste Management was putting forth was correct, they're allowed to believe those things. Our point at this point in time is just to see if there's a legally sufficient evidence to support the gross negligence case. In this case, there was other people there was evidence that indicated that, one, the story was wrong, and that Mr. White had been placed in that area from the beginning of that day. Paula De La Rosa was an independent witness to this case. She testified that the four or five times she went out there before his death, which was right around lunchtime, she saw him at the same place he was at where he died, directing traffic. Mr. Hernandez says there was a line of cars out there before he went out and saw him, that where he was directing traffic. When Detective Kelly went out there and did the investigation, he couldn't find no one was able to, at Waste Management was able to identify the name of Emilio Dodd for several hours. Detective Kelly was never told anything about a berm. He was never told anything about Mr. Dodd being out of place. None of this information about a berm or about Emilio Dodd disobeying a superior ever made it to any of the Waste Management investigative materials. Even after Johnny Smith, Ricky White's boss, talked to him. Johnny Smith ends up making the investigative report. None of that information ends up in the investigation. This story only came out after we filed suit.
Okay, so Mr. White and Mr. Smith are unadulterated liars, and the jury reasonably could have figured that out. Where is the evidence that still needs to be the affirmative evidence of subjective, okay, objective, and vice principal?
Sure, and I appreciate that question.
Because in other words, we have to find everything he said about the absence of, you know, what was it? It doesn't prove the opposite. If you disbelieve A, that doesn't prove the opposite of A, okay? So let's just take all that testimony out about the berm. Every bit of it, it's gone. What is the legally sufficient evidence that a jury could obtain a firm belief that, in fact, Waste Management was grossly negligent under the circumstances leading to the death of Mr. Dodd?
Waste Management had a policy not to use traffic directors. The reason for that was because Johnny Smith, Mr. White, Chuck Haroff, all the Waste Management employees all testified the number one hazard there is getting run over.
Okay, so White's not the actual policymaker, though, with regard to that. Haroff and Smith and even White make it absolutely clear that that's a corporate policy, a company policy, okay? So White's not responsible for that. He's the one making the decision, under your theory, as to how traffic is going to get controlled at that particular place. So, okay, fine, that's that. Again, get me back to White making a decision with authority, with conscious indifference to an objective extreme risk.
Mr. White testified at trial that he admitted that he put Dodd in that place where he died, there would be a great risk of injury and death to put him there, right? That's on section 7 of the reporter's record, page 83, line 16.
But that's an if, right?
It's correct. It's an if. I mean, so the standard that that Waste Management would like us to have in this case, which is not the standard in Texas, is essentially certainty, right? They want us to somehow have get a corporation to admit that
he's given a hypothetical that uses extreme risk, and he answers yes, that place, if he had put him there, that place he identifies as a place, a location of extreme risk. That phrase is used by Mr. White in his testimony, and then the expert from the plaintiffs says, hey, White said it was an extreme, the location was an extreme risk for injury under those circumstances, if they were hypothetically believed, okay? So, again, what's your evidence? That White had authority to make that decision with conscious indifference that wasn't retrospective. It wasn't looking at it back, oh, gee, he got killed, therefore.
I'm sorry. What's
your evidence? Give me your best evidence.
The best evidence we have is that the story that they told us was false. I mean, the story that they told us was false. The fact that he was there in the position where he died at multiple times, seen that day. The fact that there's a policy by Waste Management not to have traffic directors, they overruled that. There's a policy to have a traffic control plan. They didn't have that in place. The fact that Mr. White and Johnny Smith both testified that the place that Mr. Dodd was found at was objectively unreasonable and risky situation for any employee to be in, because that's why Waste Management has no traffic directors. That's why they don't direct traffic on foot.
But Mr. Dodd, I mean, he could have been placed behind the berm and could have voluntarily chosen to walk out into the roadway, correct?
It's possible, but the story just didn't make sense. The story still doesn't make sense. The only testimony we have is from Mr. White. None of that stuff is corroborated, didn't make it into any of their investigation material, didn't tell the police that showed up and performed an investigation. And so the reason is it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. And so Mr. Dodd was placed out there, and he reported directly to Mr. White. And our belief is that he was placed out there by Mr. White that day. And now I know we don't have any. I think in Texas they're still allowed to have circumstantial evidence to prove subjective, and the prongs here in gross negligence. In Texas, in criminal cases, they convict people for murder based on purely circumstantial evidence. The standard that Waste Management wants us to have in this case is essentially certainty. They want us to somehow get Waste Management to admit on the record, under oath, that they intended to kill Mr. Dodd, that it was objectively unreasonable, and that's an impossible burden for any plaintiff to meet, and that's not the standard in Texas. Gross negligence is still part of the statute here, and circumstantial evidence is still allowed to help prove these prongs, because otherwise there's evidence of a cover-up. The judge in this case found evidence of a cover-up. He admitted on the record. There was an entire section of objections for a dead man's rule, conversations that apparently took place between Mr. White and Mr. Dodd that never ended up.
That was not in front of the jury.
The objection was not in front of the jury.
Okay, so all that statement about the cover up and stuff, that was not in front of the jury.
That's correct, Your
Honor. Okay,
and but the statements that he claimed he had with Mr. Dodd that were not corroborated, didn't make it in any of their documents, that did go in front of the jury. And the reason I bring that up is just that the judge in Denton County had a belief that we put on evidence of a cover-up. And so the standard that the Waste Management and the appellants want to apply in this case is impossible. It would be an impossible standard for any kind of case where there's a cover-up like this.
Now, did Judge Johnson try both cases for the original mistrial and this one, or was it, there was some discussion in the briefing that another district court in Denton County originally had the case?
It was about halfway through discovery when it switched over to Judge Johnson. He tried both cases.
He tried both cases.
Right. And another partner at my firm tried the first one. I tried the second.
Okay.
And, you know, then our final kind of fallback for the evidence you want to talk about is Neil Bolton. He was our plaintiff expert. He was an expert in landfills, safety programs. He testified. It was grossly negligent for what happened to Mr. Dodd. It's clear in the record he testified to that. There wasn't any kind of counterpoint to it, but the jury has that ability to believe Neil Bolton. The evidence that we need to prove in this case is just, again, legal sufficiency, right? And our example we like to use is the Lee Lewis Construction v. Harrison case, where the Supreme Court found that there was gross negligence in that case. In that case, they found that the defendant LLC testified that falls were among the top reasons for serious injuries or death on construction projects. The LLC testified he knew workers would be exposed to those fall hazards. And the defendant knew that that the plaintiff who fell to his death was only using safety belts and lanyards. That's very similar to this case. There's a unanimous consensus from the waste management managers, the people that we put on the witness stand in this case and from the reporter's record, that being run over is the number one hazard out there. That's why they don't use traffic directors. But that's exactly what Mr. Dodd was doing in this case.
What was the name of that case again?
Sure. It's Lee Lewis Construction, Inc. v. Harrison.
Oh, okay. I see it. 2001. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. It's the Texas Supreme Court 2001. And Chuck Haroff, the safety director in this case, testified waste management has a specific policy not to use employees as traffic directors for that reason. And so the clear facts show that waste management was out of procedure that day. And that exposed Mr. Dodd to an extreme degree of risk. They put him in a risky situation, and then what happened to him was the exact thing that they have a policy to prevent. He was run over.
Well, based upon your theory that you argued both in opening and in closing, that it was Mr. White that put him in risk, okay? We can look at the policies of the company to maybe enhance or to support factually whether or not that was a dangerous thing that was being done or not, all right? But you still have to ultimately show that, in fact, he had the authority to hire and fire, to discharge Mr. Dodd if he declined to do what he was instructed to do. And you also don't have anything to actually, other than where the accident occurred and the testimony from the eyewitness that she saw him there directing traffic four or five times, that there was anything that he was doing, anything that he was actually instructed to do by a vice principal for waste management.
Except we do have evidence from Mr. White himself that he told him to go direct traffic, right? That in and of itself was a violation of waste management, right? Then the jury's free to either disregard the story of the berm, or they're free to look at the evidence itself and make a circumstantial estimate of what the evidence showed.
Didn't Mr. White also testify that Mr. Dodd, that there wasn't, that because of equipment problems at the site that day, Mr. Dodd wanted to keep working and not just be sent home with his 2 hours of pay? So
again, all that evidence is uncorroborated and not supported. But you're right. Mr. White had the opportunity to place Mr. Dodd into actual safety equipment. So essentially, there's safety equipment that these workers can go into in order to be near the working face or on the working face. He had the options to allow him to do that. He just didn't. Like, so he could have put him into concrete barriers. He could have put him into a piece of heavy machinery to get him out of to not be on foot, but that just didn't happen. And Mr. White himself was a manager in this case. The cases we like to rely on are the Treasure City v. Strange, where the head of a store security was held as the VP. Now remember, Mr. White is the landfill operations manager. It literally says in the exhibit that was shown to you during appellant's arguments, he does the day-to-day management of the DFW landfill. This is one of the biggest landfills in the United States. His superior Mr. Smith was the district level. He didn't handle just DFW. He handled DFW and a separate landfill that's in his district. Above them is another region.
So, but in looking at this job description that's in tab F of the handout that matches Mr. White's position, it doesn't say anything in here about the ability to hire and fire. Are you saying that somebody can be a vice principal without having the ability to hire and fire?
Yes, Your Honor, because if you look at the jury charge itself, which was approved and not complained of at all by the appellants, it says waste management has confided to that person the management of the whole or a department or division of the business of Waste Management of Texas, Inc. There's an or between elements one and two. There's no requirement that they need to hire and fire. And the example of that is the Shamrock Communications v. Willie case. In that case, that comes out of Austin back in 2000, it was an advertising manager, and the advertising manager did not have the ability to hire and fire.
But confide is element four, and that's ratification. That's not the argument you made.
That's correct, Judge. They did.
You don't get to mix and match three and four in terms of managing and ratifying so that you can get somebody who would be a manager for purposes of ratification is not necessarily a manager for purposes of hiring and firing under element three.
Well, I believe what I'm doing is element two underneath a person is manager or is employed in a managerial capacity. And that I'm trying to talk about the confide of the management of the whole business, which is the DFW landfill. And then underneath Waste Management of Texas may be grossly negligent because of the act of one of its employees. Mr. White was a manager based underneath the definition, since he was confided the entire management of DFW of Texas. And he was the operational manager out there. In the Shamrock case,
was there any evidence or any discovery? Did you ever request any discovery? Did you ask any questions during trial to ask for any instance where Mr. White had actually hired anybody or fired anybody as the operational manager of that landfill?
He testified he could hire people. He testified then he could fire people with permission. But he testified explicitly, and that's clear in the record, that he could hire people. But as to the confines of the division of Waste Management, which is DFW landfill, the Shamrock case was where the plaintiff was a marketing promotions director. He didn't have authority to hire or fire employees, wasn't a corporate officer or director, but the appellate court still found that the defendant was a VP in that case. And that's because he was found to be a management of the whole or department or division of that business, which was the marketing division of that radio station. It's going to be the same thing here, right? I mean, Mr. White did the day-to-day operations. He was in charge of all the employees out there. That was his testimony. His testimony was he was also in charge of all the equipment out there. There really wasn't anyone higher than him that worked at that site specifically for DFW landfill. Johnny Smith was above him at the district level. And so I believe that the evidence we put on this case.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know you're almost out of time. I have one question. Appellant has said that the Andrade case is on all fours, and you didn't address it in your brief. So why do you think that case does not apply to
sure.
these facts?
And I don't have much time to get to it.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. The Andrade case, the reason that was overturned was because it was a general corporate safety policy. If you look at the case, it's about general corporate safety policy. Waste Management had a specific policy not to do traffic directors because people get run over. Ricky White admitted during his testimony that it did happen, and he knew it. And so I believe that we proved our case in the trial court, and I look forward to seeing your order. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have to go on record as apologizing to the chief of the panel for stomping on her question a while ago, so I want to make sure that I apologize. I got a little bit too anxious, so I will sit over here in my own business now.
It happens.
I'm afraid of the shock collar that she still has control over.
Unsuccessfully.
Please the court. A couple of brief points. First, the plaintiff's expert, Neil Bolton, He did say gross negligence. And when asked, what is the basis for you saying that Waste Management was grossly negligent? He answered in terms of negligence. Well, my understanding of gross negligence is that someone knows that there's a risk and they have the ability to mitigate that, and they don't. Andrade is in
fact. Was there any de Leon predicate with regard to any of his testimony? In other words, a proper legal principle or proper legal predicate for his testimony? Either you know what I'm talking about, Birchfield or de Leon.
Right. Oh, of course, the 1987-88 cases. No, it was just video depots.
But there wasn't objection to it either. Okay.
No, so that leaves me with sort of a coastal conclusory on its face.
Okay.
To close with Andrade, one case that we cited at the very end of our reply brief, the last one we cited and the last one I think I'll discuss today, is Walmart against Gonzalez. Noodle on the floor. And when that came out many years ago, I thought it was a pretty aggressive application of the standard of review. The noodle had been on the floor, there was dirt, there were tracks, and I would think, okay, it must have been there for a while. And the Supreme Court says, no, meager circumstantial evidence, that's not good enough for us. That's a preponderance case. That's not an elevated burden case. That fed into the argument in Andrade. If you read the briefing, find it on Westlaw, wherever, find it on the website. That's one of the authorities that Wallace Jefferson relied on as counsel. And the Supreme Court didn't cite it, but you get the spirit of Walmart versus Gonzalez in Andrade. The same argument that we've heard, hey, there was a policy, they didn't follow the policy, and you could disbelieve these witnesses about saying, I didn't do it, I did it safely. I think that is equivalent, and I'd ask the court, take a look at Walmart Gonzalez and how it fits into the Andrade case. If there's nothing further, I think we've covered it thoroughly.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the oral argument, it's been very helpful, and your case has been submitted. Thank you. Do you want to take a break, or are you good to go?
I'm good to go.
You good to go straight through?
I'm fine.
Okay, all right.